Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter,
and grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
When a president reveals that he is willing to use federal power against people just to get revenge, you're in an authoritarian state.
Welcome to the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
Today we talk about ramped up attacks on our Constitution by our wannabe king, the fight to protect our national parks and our public libraries, and how the courts are responding to it all.
And then we have a great conversation about using your voice and stepping up to fight back against autocracy with actor and activist John Cryer. I'm Jessica Craven.
I'm Steve Pearson.
Stay strong. It won't be long. Yeah, yeah. We will build a better world.
Hi, Jess. Coming to you today from my hometown and my childhood bedroom, actually, in Washington, D.C., which became my dad's office after I moved
out. That is so cute, Steve. That's very cute. What brought you back to D.C., to your childhood bedroom?
Little change of scenery. Yeah, visiting my mom. And I just wanted to spend a little bit of time with her and having a few meetings here in D.C. while I'm here. But it's sort of nice to be here. I have to say, I flew into National, which I will always call National. Sorry. And it's such a beautiful drive from National, especially it was right at magic hour and sunset when I came in to Bethesda, where I grew up. And looking across the Potomac at the monuments, I just got really sad, I have to say. And I know there's so many people who live and work in D.C. and their jobs have been decimated and they're, you know, the town is really reeling. And I'd say especially looking at the Kennedy Center, I know there's so many terrible things, and we're going to talk about these terrible things and what we can do about them. But, you know, the Kennedy Center was such a big part of my childhood. It was, you know, like where we saw all the big shows, where we did children's theater and classes. And I know that fucker is going to change the name. I know he wants to put Trump Center on there. And if you haven't been inside the Kennedy Center, there's this fantastic kind of mid-century bust of Kennedy right in the middle of it. I know that's going to be gone, and he's going to want to put a big bust of himself in there. And, you know, it just made me a little depressed, a little sad coming back here. It's the first time I've really been here. Well, no, I was here for the swearing in of some of our members of Congress, but yeah. So here I am in my childhood bedroom, you know, fighting for democracy.
I hear that. I mean, the thing about D.C. that's cool to me, I'd never really spent any time there until the last couple of years. Last year, I was there a lot, like four times. And it is an absolutely spectacularly beautiful city to me. Really sort of feels almost Parisian. And I know that the architect that designed a lot of the buildings was Parisian, but that's a whole other thing. But it's beautiful. What I find striking about it, though, is the sort of permanence of it, or the feeling of sort of these buildings being so permanent and timeless. And, you know, they've weathered a lot, these buildings, and the democracy that they sort of represent. A civil war, many other wars, you know, McCarthyism, so many things. We've been through a lot, and as terrible as now is, and it's terrible, it may be the worst thing we've been through yet, obviously accepting, well, slavery, genocide, so I take that back. But
right.
This is perhaps the biggest crisis our democracy has faced, and I like to think that those buildings will still stand when this is a, you know, deeply unpleasant memory. I hope. I mean, you know, anything is possible, but I like
right.
to imagine that, yeah, that they'll still be there.
I think that's
we're
right.
Gone and yeah.
Yeah, you do get a sense when you visit these buildings, and if you have the opportunity to walk through the halls of Congress, you know, and you think about the many people who have been through there, who have, both good and bad, both very, you know, relevant and effective, and just, you know, ridiculously incompetent, you know, the whole gamut. You know, we've seen them come and go, and many have made their mark on history, and many have just faded away. So that does, hopefully the institutions and these buildings do represent that. And so it's pretty awesome in that regard. So thanks. I feel better.
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah.
And you had a little bit of a break for your birthday. Happy belated birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
You got to go enjoy some family time.
Yeah, we went to, to 29 Palms. But my kid hadn't been to Joshua Tree Park since they were very little and they didn't remember it. And I just needed a break. I mean, you know, it's like we're all exhausted and we're all stressed out. And I wanted to get away. So we went there and it was spectacular. It was we stayed at a little inn there and it was just really very sustaining and beautiful. And I had thoughts about the national parks, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But yeah, of course, I was reflecting on politics and how politics has even come to the national parks, as we know. But it was beautiful. Really nice to be there. I feel very blessed that we got to spend the weekend there. Gorgeous place. If you haven't been to Joshua Tree, gorgeous place.
I actually haven't been to Joshua Tree and, need to go. Need to visit all of our national parks. And we have some really amazing ones in our state of California too. But I'm glad you had that time. Everyone, needs to take that time and be with their family. And this is, as I talk about with our incredible interview, by the way, with John Cryer, which was so much fun, how this is, a long-term project here. It's change doesn't happen overnight, and we need to take care of ourselves as we do this work too. So,
it's a marathon, not a sprint, and it requires breaks. And absolutely mandatory that we all stop and take self-care breaks, or we're gonna not make it through. So,
that's right. Yeah. Well, speaking of chopping wood and carrying water in Joshua Tree, let's talk about the national parks. You recently did a TikTok video about what's going on there. Can you fill us in?
Yeah, well, I did a little bit of a deep dive on this after being at Joshua Tree, because when we got there, we were driving up. I had been there once before, not that long ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago. And this time when we pulled up, there was quite a long line. And I don't think this is considered high season by any stretch of the imagination, but it took a while to get in. And I was asked the woman at the front gate, you know, are you guys short-staffed? And I knew the answer on one level, but I sort of wanted to hear her say it. And she said, yeah. She said, 30% of our staff has been laid off. And she looked sad. I mean, I didn't want to say this in the video because I didn't want to, you know, quote some poor person and have blow. But she looked sad. Like she looked, I almost thought I saw tears in her eyes when she said it. And although the park was beautiful and pristine, I just had this sinking feeling while I was there of how long can it stay that way when they've lost a third of their staff. A lot of other parks have lost half of their staff. And the thing that's so crazy about this is that these parks bring in, I looked it up, it's about $55 billion a year they bring in. Huge amount of money that they bring into their local communities as well. So they bring jobs, they bring, you know, money into all the local businesses. They're a win-win. They cost way less to run than they bring in. The federal budget for them is something like 1/15 of 1% of the federal budget.
Yeah.
And yet Doge is going in and slashing them down. And the sad truth is that what I realized is that this is a metaphor for what they're doing to every single federal agency or federal department that we all care about, which is cutting them down to render them ineffective or broken so that they can then come along and privatize them. And it's the plan for the national parks. It's the plan for Social Security. It's their plan for public education, for the post office, for every single thing. And at a certain point, Americans are really going to have to stop and ask ourselves, do we want things like the national parks? Do we want a publicly owned postal service? Do we want Social Security, which is the greatest anti-poverty legislation this country has ever seen? Because we're about to lose them all. And they're not going to get lost by like some big bill that just comes and takes them away. They're going to be gutted by cutting down their staff, cutting their offices, cutting all their services. And then when people go, oh, wow, this place is a mess. Yeah, well, maybe J.P. Morgan should take it over. They'll do a better job. And there you go.
Yeah.
Goodbye, national parks.
You're so right, because you know, sometimes you're just trying to figure out, like, why would you do these things? Like, why would you do these things that are harming so many people? And so you've always got to look for the grift, because it's always about the grift with these folks. It's always about money.
Yeah.
And, you know, many of the government agencies are there to serve the public good. That's what government should do at its best, is be there to serve the needs of its citizens. So stuff like, you know, the post office is a perfect example of this. And we know this well from the last Trump term when Louis DeJoy was, you know, trying to gut the post office, and they're trying to do it again. You know, there's post offices in rural parts of the country that don't make any money. Right.
Yeah.
It costs money to keep that up, because we need those people who live there to be able to get their mail, you know, to be able to get. That's a public, that's one of the few things of these agencies that's actually baked into our Constitution. And so, you know, the national parks are a public goods, as you said. Social Security is the largest anti-poverty program ever developed. And by the way, these are our earned benefits, too.
Right.
Everything is a grift, and when you can't explain something, just, you know, I mean, it sounds cliche, but follow the money, because
for sure
that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Yeah. And the donors that bought Trump are the fossil fuel industries who want that public land, the timber industry who want that public land, that, you know, and on and on and on. So
that's really horrible, is the timber industry stuff. They just want to mow down these protected forests right now.
It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm hopeful. I hope that there will be lawsuits that can block that long enough that we can get an administration change. I mean, last time I think they were able to stop some of the worst stuff by just tying it up in the courts, until the Biden administration could drop all that, you know, reverse all those executive orders. But yeah, it feels terrible to be constantly fighting these onslaughts. I think a lot of this is what do? We educate people, we talk to people and help them understand what's happening, because you do have to sort of connect those dots in your head of like, oh, right. It's about the privatization. And that's why they want the parks to fall apart, so that they can then say, like, government has failed at running these parks, even though the government's been doing a great job for a really long time with that, and with Social Security, and with USPS. nothing that can't be solved by taxing billionaires a little bit more and putting that money into bolstering these fantastic programs. But it starts with education, because I think most Americans have just fallen for this. We have to make them sort of understand what's happening and connect the dots between all the different places they're attacking and make them see the sort of whole picture. So that's not a very satisfying action to take, but that's the first action, I think.
Well, I'll tell you, a really satisfying action to take as it pertains to the national parks is support the national parks and go visit them, you know.
Yes.
Because, you know, nothing is better for our mental health than being in nature and being amongst the trees or wherever your national park is. It's affordable. You know, most people, a lot of things that we do, some people can do it, some people can't, but most people can take a trip to their national parks and go for a hike or even go camping or however they want to do it.
So, I
guess be prepared to wait in some longer lines, but let's go support our national parks.
Yeah, for sure. And be kind to the people who are working there, because I'll tell you, they seem really traumatized to me. No, I'm serious.
Yeah, I know. I'm laughing because I can just imagine people getting so fed up and angry with them, you know, these poor rangers.
Well, yeah, and also they've seen half of their coworkers fired. And also they care about these places. Like, they care so deeply about these parks. And
you don't become a park ranger because you want to get really rich and retire early.
Right. No, you care, and you want the wildlife to be okay. You want the it's devastating to think that we don't have to dwell on this, but what we can remember when there was the government shutdown, was it 2018, the 35-day government shutdown? What happened to Joshua Tree during those 35 days when there wasn't staff there to protect that park was horrifying. Like, Joshua Tree's cut down and people, you know, defecating, all like bad. Like, we need people working in these parks. There is a reason for it. And it is just value added for all of us and for our children and our grandchildren. So this is something that is really outside of party lines. I think we can all agree. I mean, all of the things they're attacking are things that everyone loves the Postal Service. Everybody loves Social Security. Everybody loves national parks. So I think we can all agree, even if you're a Trump voter, in which case you're probably not listening to this podcast. But these are things we can agree on and fight for. So, yeah. And if there's another set of protests for the parks, go if you can, please.
I was gonna say, if you're a Trump voter and you're listening to this podcast, leave us a voice message. But I thought better of it. Please don't.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
you're curious. If you're curious, if you're liberal curious,
I don't mean to be demeaning. We're big tent. Like, we're here for you. If you want to have a real conversation and if you're having some buyer's remorse, man, I don't blame you. You know. So sure. Leave a message for us.
Yeah,
the phone number is on our show notes. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's also talk about the public good. There's been attacks on our public libraries too. Do you want to talk about that and what we can do about it?
Yeah, well, that's just real quick. This actually was brought to my attention by some of my subscribers who were really, really worried about it. So basically, it turns out I have a lot of librarians and library adjacent people subscribing to the newsletter. So the Institute of Museum and Library Services.
That's a lot of pressure for you.
Yeah, I know. Oh, believe me, I can't get not one typo get slides by. So the Institute of Museum and Library Services, IMLS, it is the nation's only federal agency dedicated to supporting America's libraries and museums. And they want to eliminate federal funding for it. Or dramatically cut it. And literally, it is one of those things where if they cut it, our libraries can't sustain themselves. And it's just, again, like, what are we trying to accomplish with this? We want to privatize the libraries? I don't know what exactly their thought is, but this is, again, about the public good and about things that we all value. I mean, I am a huge public library fan. I get all my books from almost all of my books from the library, and I took my kid to the library. We all love libraries, right? So, again, these are the things that make America great, if you want to talk about making America great, and they're under attack. So a subscriber of mine sent me a ResistBot letter that he wrote, and I put it in the newsletter today. We can put the code to send it in the show notes as well, but, you know, mention this to your representatives. Tell them you want them to to increase that funding as, you know, to make it sustainable for our museums and our libraries. It's real important.
Yeah, the libraries are already struggling, have had to change their hours. I know my local library, I don't think is open on Fridays anymore. They cut one day of the week out to try to save money. I mean, they're already operating on a very thin budget. And I grew up right down the street here in Bethesda, going to my Bethesda library. I spent a lot of time there. And, So we also want to talk about the really horrible abduction of the, you know, green card holders, asylum seekers, you know, people living here, and the courts. But oddly enough, that kind of ties into my reason for hope. So I'm going to slide that into our reason for hope segment.
I love a segue.
Love a segue. Even that's probably the biggest stretch of a segue I've ever thrown out there, but we'll roll with it. But before I do that, let's get to your reason for hope, Jess.
Okay, so my reason for hope was that the courts blocked the transgender military ban yesterday, and pretty decisively. They blocked Hegseth. Sorry, I don't even like to say that guy's name. So this is U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes. She's an appointee of President Biden. Another reminder that one of the reasons that we vote for Democrats is, even if we don't like every single one of their policies, they appoint great judges. And this is a judge who just did the right thing. She barred Defense Secretary Hegseth and other military officials from implementing the order. And she said the plaintiff's military statuses must remain unchanged until further order of the court. So, you know, as someone with a transgender kid and someone who just hates to see a marginalized community that is already struggling attacked senselessly, and also, you know, at a time when military recruitment is at an all-time low, we have, you know, 10,000, 14,000 transgender military members who are good service members. Yeah. We can't afford to lose anybody in the military right now. So it's just a victory across the board, and I'm real happy about it.
It's a great victory. I'm happy about it, too. And it does segue kind of nicely into my reason for hope, because we've seen a lot of action with the courts right now, and it feels like a lot of these court cases are starting to come to a head. But let me back up a little bit with some context here. So, you know, I'm sure everyone saw the you can't call it a deportation because that's not what it was. No. It was a bunch of asylum seekers and residents who were rounded up and without any due process put on a plane and sent to a jail in El Salvador. And under the guise of a archaic principle, really, that there would be special wartime powers afforded to the president if he declared a group a terrorist or I don't even understand it. It's bogus. It was smacked down by a judge who ordered those planes to be turned around. And the Trump administration defied that order and lashed out about the judge. And so here's a few things. The not reason for hope, the very scary part of this is this is truly flies in the face of the Constitution and our very freedoms and our very rights to deny anyone due process. We don't know who these people are. They say that they call them monsters. Right. They say that they're violent criminals. Many of them were finding out now. Some of their family members are coming forward and saying that they have never been charged with any crime other than crossing into the U.S., where they have been reporting for their hearings and are seeking asylum. So this is terrifying, you know, frankly. Yeah. And this is a very, very important moment. What brings me hope is through Trump's attempt to denigrate and call for the impeachment of a judge that tried to block his unconstitutional and illegal action, our Chief Justice John Roberts actually You can't call it a smackdown. John Cryer and I talk a little bit about this. But it was a rebuke. And it's very rare for any Supreme Court justice to make a public statement like this. So it's significant when they do. And the fact that John Roberts enters into my Reason for Hope segment is as shocking to me as it is to anyone else listening to this. But I've got to have some hope that the court, even though they gave away a lot of their power to the president already, still wants to retain their independence, and John Roberts wants to retain some semblance of his legacy as Chief Justice in this, what this court does. And so, you know, the rule of law right now seems to be really blocking a lot of these things. And you just mentioned it with trans military members. And, you know, we saw another ruling yesterday, I believe, as we're recording this, that the DOGE actions at USAID were unconstitutional. You know, that's given me hope, because this is the this is where we can fight the immediacy of this moment, is in the courts, and then with us being out there in the street and using our power and our voices. The Democrats aren't in power right now, and there's not a lot we can do with our elected members right now until we get back power in 26. So, you know, looking at what the courts are doing is giving me a little bit of hope.
Yeah. And that mostly, I mean, the Trump administration is not complying completely, but they're mostly compliant, like they're somewhat compliant. I mean, I think that we are about to hit a moment where they're either going to just start brazenly defying.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, which they kind of did with these flights, but they've sort of made up a bullshit excuse of why they weren't. But like,
they're over international waters, so blah, blah, blah.
Right, bullshit. Yeah. But like, we'll hit a moment where they will be brazen about it, and then that's when, you know, yeah, what's going to happen? Is the Supreme Court, is John Roberts finally going to realize, like, oh, if they don't obey those courts, I guess they could not obey me also, and then I have no purpose. Like, at some point, I hope that he will see that the entire judiciary is on the line. But we'll see. There's a lot of we'll see.
I think he does. I mean, it seems – I don't know why he would make that statement if he didn't. And these cases will all escalate to the Supreme Court. And that's been Trump's, you know, modus operandi forever, is, you know, just appealing stuff and getting it up to the higher courts and then depending on his, you know, bought and paid for, you know, Supreme Court to have his back. And – you know, sadly, they did in the immunity case, but we'll see if they really want to give up all of their power to this wannabe king.
Right, because they will be. They'll give it all up. I mean, that's the thing. What will even be the point of a Supreme Court anymore if they don't hold him accountable? So, yeah, hopefully they understand that. I don't think that Thomas and Alito will understand it, but maybe the rest of them? We'll see. Yeah.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
As they say, watch this space.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, that was a lot. And we have a really great interview with someone who I've gotten to know a little bit just because he's been so active. And you went to grade school with John Cryer, is that right?
Weirdly, went to grade school, junior high school 104 in Manhattan. Yes, we were there. He was a couple years older than us, but we overlapped. Yeah, so
there you go.
I've always been proud of him as a 104 graduate that, that he's been out there using his voice.
All right, so coming up is an interview with 104 graduate John Cryer. Joining us for our interview this week is John Cryer. You know him as an iconic actor from Two and a Half Men, Pretty in Pink, and many other roles. But he's also a really passionate activist fighting for democracy. John has been using his platform to champion progressive causes, call out corruption, and mobilize voters. John, thanks so much for doing all of that and for being here.
Well, thanks. Thank you. You know, it's really kind of you to ask me to participate.
Well, when we logged on before we were recording, we were just talking about how every pleasant tree has the caveat when you ask me how we're doing. It's just been a crazy week. So you and your wife, Lisa, are incredibly tuned in and very involved. So, you know, how are you and your family? I'll just start there.
Oh, we're good. You know, we're obviously very concerned. You know, it's every day seems to bring some new outrage, and that was part of the plan. We understand that Trump intended to work this way. He intended to flood the zone, and that, you know, Project 2025 was always about let's front load everything and see what we can get away with. And let's, you know, deluge the courts and try to break the constitutional order. That's what's happening. And thankfully, you know, the courts are slowing things down. You know, the process is, you know, the process, because we have the internet, and because, you know, this DOGE is so poorly run and already such a fiasco that we're hearing about it. You know, we're hearing daily about the ridiculous stuff that they're doing. And but I don't know how much of it is landing with the public. But I know I'm getting to hear about it. So I have to assume they're hearing some of it. And also, I think that, you know, we're seeing in town halls across the country, we're seeing in the Tesla takedown movement. That people are mad about this, and they're searching for a way to feel like they're doing something.
Yeah, you mentioned all the court stuff that's been going on. I think especially this week, it really feels like a lot of that is coming to head. And with John Roberts, kind of smackdown. It wasn't really a smackdown, but a mild rebuke, which is pretty unprecedented. You know,
it's unprecedented. You know, of course, it's somewhat ridiculous. I mean, the man, John Roberts Court is going to be, I believe, considered one of the most shameful Supreme Courts that we have ever had. I mean, you know, between Citizens United and the immunity ruling and the 14th Amendment ruling, you know, just obvious pandering to Trump has been, you know, and disastrous. I mean, he's now saying, hey, you can't impeach judges. That's bad. You know, and it's like
he gave away all this power. And now he's like, no, don't take the power away from us.
Yes. How dare you? How dare you act like judges are illegitimate? He's been acting like judges are illegitimate for decades. That's what he does. And you empowered him. You gave him immunity. I pointed out online that Donald Trump could be calling Pam Bondi right now, his attorney general, and ginning up false charges against him at that moment. And because of the way John Roberts has structured his rulings, that would be completely legal, and we would have no means of discovering that. Because it would be privileged, and we'd have to have Pam Bondi come forward and saying he's just too corrupt, you know, which I doubt is going to happen. So, you know, he himself has created this monster, and it's almost pathetic that he's trying to rein him in now. I hope it's not too late.
Yeah, I mean, it's our last vestige right there. You know, I mean, we're in a constitutional crisis right now. But, you know, the Supreme Court rulings and then what Trump does, you know, with the rulings is the last thing that we have to watch here. But you mentioned what you had shared on social media and all that. And I just want to commend you. Anyone who has a platform like you do, and a lot of folks in the entertainment industry who I've been fortunate enough to work with, who lend their voice and their platform to this cause, I really appreciate, because not everyone does it. And you've been really vocal about, you know, protecting democracy, using your platform. We were talking again before we were recording. All the good stuff happens before we record.
Yes. this stuff was gold before we started.
Right. Exactly. About like how long the outrage has been maybe, or when it is. But what first made you step up to use your voice and be an activist in this space?
First and foremost, I do not love being an activist. I like entertaining people. I'm a clown. I enjoy that. That's what I do. And I did not. I was. I was very reluctant. I had joined Twitter reluctantly because Ashton Kutcher was on it and having a great time. And and he and I were doing a show together. And he said, you should try it. I was like, okay, I'll try it. And I had fun for those first few years. It was a really interesting thing. I met a lot of interesting people. And then when Trump started emerging from the Republican field, I started actually warning Republicans, I was trying to say, you guys, I don't think you understand, you know, this guy's been a con man for 30 years. You know, I come from New York City. You know, we mm-hmm. were, you know, he was always in the headlines in New York City. You know, we got to hear about it over the years. We got to hear about the Nixon administration trying to shut him down because he was obviously discriminating against African Americans. We right. got to hear about all the lawsuits against all his casinos from African Americans. We got to hear the Taj Mahal casino getting fined $10 million for money laundering. Over the years, he was a businessman who got away with a lot, you know. Yeah. And I was trying to warn Republicans, hey, stay away from this guy. He's a con man. And of course, the deluge of MAGA resistance I got from that was just like my first taste of, oh, OK, there's new rules here. It's interesting. One of the good things about social media is it does give you a thicker skin. I now have a much thicker skin about what people say okay. about me online. Because you just it's in the ether. It's just this, you know, it's just people yammering on.
And you realize what it is too. It's not personal. It's either cult members or trolls or bots or whatever. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. They seem to think that making fun of my last name because the word cry is in it, is the most effective rhetorical. That's going to convince me. That's going to shut me up. You know, they made fun of my last name. Oh, this has been a problem since junior high school. Oh, and now it's coming back to bite me in the ass. I would love to not.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Not be an activist. I would love for the people that have embraced the cult of Trump to just say, you know what, that was dumb. He's a con man. He lied to me a lot. I believed him about a lot of things. He took advantage of me. And you know what? I'm done. That would be great. And I would shut up. I will happily shut up after them. If you really want me to shut up on social media, MAGA, just stop supporting Donald Trump. Yeah. There you go. You win. Once he emerged as the Republican front runner, I had to start speaking out. I started doing it on talk shows. But again, I'd rather be a clown. I would rather just and obviously, according to some MAGA people, I remain a clown, even especially when
we can be both, right? Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, joy is revolutionary. Like we need to be able to laugh and we can't let them take that away from us.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. I tried to. You know, and I've gone around, you know, I remember during the first Trump administration, I went to a lot of demonstrations and that was a fun experience. The community is great and realizing you're not alone is great. Mm-hmm. So I do recommend them. you know, if you can. Although they're funny, sort of. You've been to them, you know. There's always groups that you're like, oh, they're coming to this? Oh, okay, sure. Well, welcome to the demonstration. I remember at my first impeachment demonstration, a small group of young people showed up and we were all excited. We were like, oh, yeah, the teenagers. Yeah, all right, we're great. And then they revealed themselves as fervent communists. I mean, literally waving little red books and the whole nine yards. And so we all just kind of walked about 8 feet away from them, just like there was this mass sort of like, okay, you know, and they, you know, and at some point we thought maybe they were trolling us, you know. So it is, it's a funny, you know, you go to these things and you realize, okay, mass movements are made of truly masses of people, and you're going to meet a lot of really interesting people who are all going to have different reasons for getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the opportunity to hang out with you when you were coming to help out George Whitesides on his campaign, both as a surrogate and knocking on doors. I really appreciated you doing that work. Have you done a lot of, like, you mentioned going to protests and using your voice. Have you done a lot of door knocking other than that? What was your experience like with that?
That was my first door knocking experience.
Really?
And that was great. And George, watching George handle that stuff was fantastic. I thought he handled it really well.
You were the secret weapon there, because people were going to close the door on George, and then they're like, oh, hey, I know you.
Well, you have that familiarity, of being on television. And to some degree, by the way, that's why you get, when you do get resentment, that's why people feel like you have an unfair advantage. They feel like you have an audience already. You know, I'm just a normal person. You know, you saying this suddenly is unfair, because you have the advantage of that familiarity. And I get that. I understand that. But again, I'm just an American citizen.
I don't mean to interrupt, but that can be disarming too. And that's what I found when we were knocking on doors together. And I think that, you know, maybe on the surface in social media, people can be like, oh, they're celebrity, they're just using their platform or what, you know, the whole stay in your lane thing. By the way, civics is everybody's lane. But you know, what I found when we were out knocking on doors is people knee jerk. You know, sometimes we had more conservative people that we ran into just wanted to shut the door in our faces. And then when they were able to connect with you on a different level, all of a sudden their ears were opened. And we were talking like human beings, not like two different factions. That's what's so powerful about one-on-one contact knocking on doors. And it was really interesting watching that happen with you out there. I don't know if that experience resonates with you.
Oh, it absolutely resonated with me. But I actually, I was well trained in this area, because I used to hand out, I was one of those guys, my very first job was handing out bills on the street. I was advertising for a local fitness club. And the constant rejection you get from New Yorkers as you're trying to put these pieces of paper in their hand trained me well. That and going to auditions that I got rejected from. So door knocking actually had a similar experience for me. I thought we had very positive experiences. There was only a couple of people, I think, that did not respond to that. But
By design. I should also say, when anyone listening to this goes out and knocks on doors for candidates, we're going to a list of who we think are our supporters mostly. So, mm-hmm. You know, by design, we're hoping to reach people that will agree with us and not looking to get in arguments. But sometimes you do, the wrong person answers the door.
Yes. And it's like a shame. And it's a shame because, like, I remember there was one guy who was very vociferous in his rejection of of the Democrats. And that's fine. But I was saying, standing right next to me is the guy who's running for Congress. This is your chance to tell him about your concerns. You could start, you know, instead of just out and out rejecting this whole thing, you could tell him what you're concerned about. He may win. And in the end, of course, he did win. And that guy could have had some face time with the congressman, you know, but he blew his chance. So if you get a knock from me, folks, just take it easy. You never know. That guy might win.
Yeah. So we were talking about engaging in sort of how to deflect the trolls or just ignore them or whatever. But, you know, with just like you articulated earlier, this complete blitzkrieg of terrible actions coupled with the constant lies and all the disinformation, what have you found to be the most effective way to actually get the truth out there and engage people and mobilize people that are just feeling overwhelmed or worse yet, apathetic?
I don't know what lands. Honestly, I just keep doing it. I mean, I'm now on several different social media platforms. I haven't left Twitter or X rather, mostly because if I leave, then somebody could take over my account and buy a blue check, and they could just tweet as me. So exactly. I'm not gonna straight up leave, but I'm not posting there anymore. But
I'm a Blue Sky guy myself.
Yes, I've gone to Blue Sky, and I will probably start posting videos on TikTok as well, just to put stuff in the conversation and use what following that I have. But what I'm more looking to right now is funding long-term organizations, funding organizations that are, you know, what the Democrats are up against now is an incredibly well-funded infrastructure of political opposition. They have, you know, Turning Point, which funds and supports young Republicans, and they have Heritage and, you know, the Federalist Society. So they have this infrastructure that builds their right wing politicians from the ground up, as well as this incredible right-wing outrage industry that just constantly gins up outrage at perceived left-wing excesses.
And money.
And money, yeah. So we've got to start building that infrastructure. We've got to, I mean, there is some of it, and there's like the American Constitution Society, which I suggest people look into, which is, you know, an alternative to the Federalist Society. They've had a lot of success recommending judges to the Biden administration. There's the SGCC, which is working on getting state legislators. There's the First 50. There's, you know, I think that's where I'm trying to put as much of my attention and monetary resources to now, because I feel like that's long term. That's the problem. Now, of course, unfortunately, we're in the middle of a crisis right now, because if Trump succeeds at what he's doing right now, we're in an autocracy for real. This is we're actually in an authoritarian state. I mean, honestly, unfortunately, what he's done already has put us in basically a soft authoritarianism. You know, I was pointing out before the election that authoritarianism isn't tanks on every corner. It's when corporations comply in advance, when ABC and CBS possibly get defamation suits against them by a sitting president of the United States, and they cave. That's complying in advance. They're basically to fill people in. Trump sued George Stephanopoulos for defamation for saying that he had been found liable for being a rapist in his case with E. Jean Carroll. And he sued ABC and Disney, and they settled the case, even though they had a rock solid First Amendment case, because the judge in that case had said that what he was found liable for was tantamount to rape, was commonly understood as rape. So ABC was looking for a way out and a way to not get, you know, when a president reveals that he is willing to use federal power against people just to get revenge, you're in an authoritarian state. We are in that right now, because he has tried to take away the security clearances from legal firms that represented people that he just didn't like Jack Smith or Hillary Clinton. So he's trying to scare law firms from representing people that he is angry with. So if you have corporations, you know, you also have Amazon paying $40 million for a documentary about Melania Trump.
Right.
You know, so this is a sitting president who's getting paid, you know, $37 million because they're trust me, no documentary costs $40 million. there is no documentary that has ever been made that costs $40 million. You know, this is a straight up cash payment to a sitting president. You know, so CBS now is also still being sued about 60 Minutes. They're considering a settlement because they're worried that Trump will use the FCC to shut down a merger that they're considering. So, you know, all of that is authoritarianism. This is when people are just like, you know what, it's easier to just pay this guy off, to just bribe him. Than to do that. So we're there, you know, we are, you know, I had been saying since 2018 that Trump loves Putin because he admires him. He admires the kleptocracy he has created. He admires that it's an authoritarian state. And that's what he wants to do to America. It's very clear. I have communicated with former employees of his who said, yep, that's what he wants. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, there is an authoritarian streak within the Republican Party and has been for a long time. But it's now fully in flower. You know, they clearly are, you know, and I get enraged when they consider themselves patriots, because you're not a patriot. If you want an authoritarian president, if you want an executive that has all power, as a, you know, that overwhelms the judiciary and the legislative branches, then you're not a patriot, because that's not what the founders designed. You know,
when you're fighting for freedom, when you're fighting for the rights of everyone living here, that's what it means to be a patriot. You know?
Yeah.
And I want Democrats to take back the flag. You know, we fly one in front of our home, and you know, that you would see someone dressed like head to toe in red, white, and blue, and automatically assume that they're conservative or they're a MAGA is a really huge issue.
It's galling. It's really galling. Yeah. Because this is, you know, obviously the United States has had huge problems. You know, obviously it was founded with slavery being a big component of the United States government
on stolen lands.
You know, you can look at all of that and say, yes, that absolutely, that, you know, that was a stain that, you know, we do have to deal with. But wanting to go back, you know, wanting to find the few good kernels of the egalitarianism that the founding fathers had, that's what the Republicans want now. They seem to want to get rid of that even.
They just want money and power, and they're desperation. And like this, you talk about the history of our country, which is literally being erased right now under this new name of DEI, like that they're trying to poison that. And it's straight up racism. In fact, I was looking at your Blue Sky account, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but it will be correctly placed on our YouTube video. You can tell me what your pen tweet is, but you're saying we might be able to defeat Trump, but it's going to take decades to defeat Trumpism. And I think that was a really great tweet and notion, because it speaks to, you know, this is a long haul. And I think so often we're looking for someone or something just to fix everything and make it better. And the fact is, like, this has to be part of our daily lives, is looking at this clearly, doing what we can in our lives to push back against it and to fight for a better future. And then also embracing the clowns and embracing joy and having fun and living our lives too. Like, it all works together to fight this authoritarianism that, you know, you very aptly described. It's exactly what we're sitting in right now. And I never thought that I would be here, but here we are. So we put one foot in front of the other. And
We want things to be instant. You know, right now, you know, we're incredibly impatient with Democratic leaders. And, you know, you have the sort of old hands, the Schumers and such, saying, you know, we've got to wait until, you know, the public really understands, you know, till his poll numbers start showing that he's vulnerable, you know, before we can really strike. And it's like, well, that may be too late, you know. You know, I understand their logic. I mean, that is the way politics has operated in the past. But it feels like we're in a new era now. And I want people to be patient and say this is a long haul. And you know, there have been people-powered movements that have defeated authoritarianism. It has happened. It's hard. And it does take time. You can't just say it has to be tomorrow. You know, it will take time. We'll have to build it. You know, and we're going to have to. You know, I we'll see how the Senate works out, who it's, you know, its current leadership vacuum. But it's a psychological adjustment I think we have to make that this is going to be a while. You know, this has been a strain of politics in America for a long time. And that's what we have to work at changing.
And we just all need to do what we can. We all need to get involved, and that's the idea of practical activism, is we all have the capacity to do different things. But like you said earlier, there's a bunch of great organizations to support, and we will have links to all of those that you mentioned in our show notes so people can check those out. And, you know, there is absolutely, obviously, urgency to this work. Not trying to diminish that. You know, we're seeing the courts really stepping up, supporting the courts, I think, or lawyers who are protecting our democracy and our freedoms. That's the immediate work, getting out there to Tesla takedown protest and being in the street and calling your reps constantly, making that noise so that they know that the pressure is there. That's really important. But, you know,
that absolutely does work. They really do. Yeah. They do respond to that. Also, by the way, I'm starting to when I've read like a journalist that I like or an article that I like, I'm going, OK, I've got to subscribe. I have to support the journalism that's going to keep this going. You know, if you like ProPublica, if you, you know, Philadelphia Inquirer has been doing great stuff. So I started to, so I've got a subscription to them. You know, when I read stuff that I feel like, okay, the journalism here is important, or there's, you know, Substacks or Mediums or Ghost is another service that,
there's another one.
Journalists. Yeah, there's another one. Yes.
Hard to keep up.
I know. It is hard to keep up with. But again, if there are small ways that you can participate in, all of it is valuable. And just showing up at these things. I mean, the biggest thing long term, I feel, that has to happen is Citizens United has to come down.
And again, we've got to get, you know, electeds in there with the will to do something about that. And so, like, the longish medium term stuff is looking at the midterms and doing everything we can to get power back in the House. And, you know, I know a lot of people are concerned, as I am, that we'll have free and fair elections in 26. But as you said, Republicans are well funded. Elon Musk is pouring everything he's got into these elections to stay in power. And so we need to organize now to win the House back. We only have a few seats to do it. So
yeah. So another thing that I'm trying to do, and we realized that I was talking with some activists from GLAAD, actually, and as an artist, the most powerful things are narratives, are stories that people that inform people's lives and change how people feel. I mean, we were talking about the power of Will and Grace, you know, and how Will and Grace completely changed the national conversation. There's, you know, gay marriage would not have happened had Will and Grace not happened. And so there is this incredible power to narratives, getting the stories out of people. And I actually was recently given the opportunity, a friend of mine, his name is Suzanne Rico. And she and I were kind of joking one night because I had been telling her that I was a space nerd and I loved the history of the space program. And,
and I remember you talking to
I talked to George Whitesides about that because obviously he used to work at NASA because I'm fascinated about that. And we were at a dinner party, and she said, "Oh yeah, my grandpa used to work for NASA," and I was like, "Oh my God, that's amazing!" You know, she said, "Yeah, yeah," and before that, he worked for Hitler. But anyway, and I was like, "Wait, whoa, okay. Sorry, Suzanne, time out, sweetie, we gotta go back and find that." Turns out, she had this amazing story of her grandfather, and she had been recently. Her mother had passed away, and her mother had been writing a memoir, but was unable to finish it because she passed away. So she asked Suzanne to finish her memoir for her. So Suzanne had to dive into this history of her family in a way that she had never had to do before. And it was harrowing and terrifying. And you know, she had to look at the how her grandfather was complicit in creating this super weapon for Adolf Hitler. He created the V-1, which was the first cruise missile. And she had to sort of come to terms with the legacy of having that in her family. But in the course of telling this story, what was fascinating to me was her grandfather was a genius, an engineering genius, and his family was a normal family in many respects. He had five kids. And what we got to tell, what she got to tell through telling the story of her family was how a family of good people with no particular animosity towards anybody could get sucked into working for an authoritarian regime, you know, the little steps of how authoritarianism fell in Germany at the time, you know, the little ways that it affected people's lives, and the ways that they slowly became a part of it. It became a part of, you know, one of the most horrendous evil in the last few centuries, you know. And so Suzanne made a podcast about it called The Man Who Calculated Death, and I produced it, and it's been it's available wherever you get your podcasts. But the value it's presenting right now is that it's the story of a family of how a family survives their country slowly falling to authoritarianism, and you know, obviously, I'm hoping that we take a different route. I'm hoping the power of the narrative, so that you understand how this happens, and what are the choices that led to this, and in the hope that we can avoid that.
Amazing. Well, we'll have a link to that too, and I'm looking forward to listening to that. Sounds amazing. And you've done a lot of work in the podcast space too, so I'm sure it's excellently produced as well.
Oh, thank you. I do enjoy it. I'm a podcast addict myself. I love them, and a really good one is just so incredibly absorbing and awesome. And don't get me started.
Yeah. Hey, you're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
I know you got to go. I want to ask you one last question before we cut you loose, and that's, what is giving you hope right now?
What's giving me hope right now are the town halls right now, because they're happening in deep red districts. There is already a wave of discontent. Donald Trump's popularity is already plummeting. His honeymoon was, a week and a half. I do think this will start getting through to people who don't follow politics very soon. I hope that it's not through just the enormous amount of damage that occurs. But we are finding a lot of people who did not sign on to Trump for a war with Canada. You know, they weren't looking to go to war with Greenland and Panama. You know, if you bring that up with a Trump supporter, they're like, I don't know what he's talking about. And they don't, I feel like there's power in questions. You can just say, hey, why is he doing that? Because they don't know. They can't tell you. They can say, oh, fentanyl. It's like, no, that's 0.01% of the fentanyl that comes into the United States. That's not it. And they say, oh, well, it's because we had a bad trade deal with Canada. It's like, well, Trump made the deal with Canada. The USMCA was him. That was entirely him renegotiating NAFTA. So if we had a bad deal, Trump's the reason we had a bad deal. So why are we having a trade war now? And they can't answer it. They don't know.
Yeah.
And then I say, well, I'll tell you. It's because he wants to economically coerce Canada to become a 51st state. He means that. It sounds delusional because on some level he's delusional. But that's actually what he wants. And what's hilarious to me, and I'm sorry, you poor man,
please.
You had no idea how much I would just yammer on in this thing.
It's fantastic.
Is that if in fact Donald Trump wanted Canada to become a United State, a member of the United States, he could have gone about it in a totally different way and maybe had some success. You know, if he could have said, let's make ourselves much more entwined trading partners. Let's, you know, that he could have done that. He could have said, you know, he could have tried to woo them as opposed to insulting them. You know, he made it so much harder if, in fact, that's what he wants. You know, and if this is all a negotiating stance, it's dumb. You know,
that's the thing that gives me hope about all of this is the fact is Republicans are in power. In a big way. They have all the levers of power right now. So if they really wanted to legally dismantle the government, you know, demolish these departments, you know, get rid of Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare and all the things they've been trying to do for decades, they could have done it really undercover and in a much quieter way and in a much more effective way. So the fact that they're, you know, prancing around on a stage with a chainsaw and having the, you know, threatening 200% tariffs on our allies and, you know, just all this really, really dumb shit gives me some hope because they are not the best and brightest who are doing this.
No, exactly. They're ideologues and a lot of them are just dumb. And that, you know, again, we're grateful for small things now.
We'll take the stupidity where we can.
Yes.
Anyway, well, that's probably a good note to end on.
Yes.
John, thank you so much. I really appreciate you doing this, and it was great to have you on.
Great. Thank you. And do check out The Man Who Calculated Death. Wherever you get your podcasts, it's coming out from behind. It was behind the Wondery paywall, but it is now going to be free. So it's coming out over the next few weeks. It's going to be free with commercials. And so I hope you enjoy it. The Man Who Calculated Death.
Can't wait. Thanks, John Cryer.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, we want to play and read some of the comments that you all have sent in about what you're doing. As a reminder, we have a call-in number for you to leave a message for us, and we'll play it on the show. That's 818-824-4286. And you can text us there too and text your message to us also. We'd love to hear from you. Hey, Jess, guess what?
We got some calls and texts this week, didn't we?
We got a call and some really great texts.
That's fantastic.
So,
very exciting.
So if the technology works here, I'm going to play this voicemail that we got right now so we can listen to it together.
Good.
Hi, I'm Jill. I live in the far out suburbs of Chicago. One thing that I participated in recently, I went to a postcard writing party put together by the Democratic Women of DuPage County. And there were probably 40, 50 people all crammed into the Democrats' office on a Thursday night. And we were writing postcards to try to get out the vote for the local elections that are coming up. There's a lot of Democrats running, and it was really nice to be in a room with other people who cared about the same sorts of things, all putting our shoulder to the wheel. That's it. Bye.
I love that.
I know.
That is great. And you know what's so great? I mean, there's a couple of things I love about that. First of all, that it really does make a difference to get into a room with people. Like, it's great to be on Zoom calls. It's great. That's all great. But like physically showing up, if you wherever you live, if you can try to find your local Democratic Party or your local Indivisible group or your local swing left group, there's so many organizations doing sort of local weekly get togethers, and it makes all the difference to be with other people who are as concerned as you are. It will just bring you so much hope. And that was what I heard that she was doing. And also they're writing postcards for local elections, which, you know, so important. Right, Steve?
100%. Yeah. I mean, echo everything you just said, being in community with each other, it will sustain you. It is so great to be with, you know, people doing this work together. But also, you know, when you get involved in local stuff, it really, like, through all the horrible stuff that's happening federally, there are amazing people locally who are galvanizing their resources and working to protect their communities. And that will give you a lot of hope, too. So I love it. Thank you so much, Jill, for your incredible voicemail.
Awesome, Jill. Thank you.
And do you want to read this text from Uriel?
Okay, we've got, hi, my name is Uriel. I am 18 years old. I just registered to vote. Here is what I am doing to keep myself sane. Yay, congratulations. Go to school, stay away from Trump supporters, go to gym, go home, take a nap. I like that nap part a lot.
Napping is great.
Napping is great. Make calls for Gay Valamont, Florida District 1 candidate. Read Chop Wood. Woohoo! Eat dinner, make more calls, and then watch Schitt's Creek. Also, highly endorse that part, Uriel. Yep. Thank you for keeping me sane, Jessica, during these times, and thank you for doing these podcasts. So this is, to me, this is like the ideal sort of like work activism balance, you know? You got your and your self-care. So you're going to school, you're making sure you're eating, you're going to the gym, which, you know, it's important to like get that anxiety out and exercise, eating, napping, and making phone calls, and then
and
doing a little bit more resting.
And watching some fun TV. Yeah.
I mean, Schitt's Creek is indispensable during a time like this. So I love all of that. And I also love to know that I've got, you know, younger readers, because I, you know, sometimes I worry that we're you know, like kind of the demographics of my newsletter are all slightly older folks. And it's really good to know that young people are reading it, too. So
it is. And also good to know that there are millions and millions and millions of brand new voters who are going to be showing up and voting in the midterms for the first time.
That's right. 4 million young people register to vote every year or are eligible. I'm not sure they all do register, but if you're young, make sure you register to vote.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget that all of the links for our actions are in the show notes, so don't just listen. Click those links and take action. Please do subscribe, rate, and review our show on Apple, YouTube, or wherever you watch/listen. And share our show with your friends and family members. Make sure they are taking action to help us win, too. If you're able to support our show on Substack, we would be very grateful for that. And you will get an ad-free version of our show as well. We will be back next week with some more Practivist Pod. And until then, don't forget, hope is in action.
Bye, everybody.
Hold on. Stay strong. It won't be long.
Yeah, yeah.
We will build a better world.
Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter,
and grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.